Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's a minute and 15 seconds past the hour of 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. I'm Bob. I'm back. I've been gone for a week. It feels like I've been gone for a month. And, of course, we get it started with a Moran Monday. And let me just say, it appears that if I so much as leave the microphone for a day or two, the Morans absolutely run hog wild. You ever seen a hog running hog wild? It ain't pretty. My God, we've got... we have so much to do this evening. It's almost, inconceivable the amount of stuff there is out there. Oh my God, there's the Pope story. There is, we got the Pope story. We got the weird ass textbooks in Texas. We've got the, Rapid City, South Dakota, the police have now transformed themselves into the Lesbian Marriage Patrol. They're a standing nominee. We are up to our eyeballs, I tell you, in morons. Then there's Prescott, Arizona, where we can't have any banners in Spanish, morons. And by the way, Stars on Ice won't be having Johnny Weir on. So Stars on Ice gets a Moran nominee, a Moran Monday nominee. Stars on Ice doesn't want Johnny Weir to tour with them because he's not family friendly. That's weird-ass right-wing code for he's gay! I mean, really, really gay! Not family friendly? Hello? What's he doing with his family? Let's take a look at family friendly. Johnny Weir has put his younger brother through college. He provides financial support to his entire family because his father's disability has knocked him out of work. He's basically taken his family on his back, or on his skates, as the case may be. But Stars on Ice doesn't want him on their ice. I don't know. Does Tagay melt to ice? You'd think they'd all be lake swimmers by now if that was the case. I mean, yeah. And then there are horse-faced politicians who are sweating it out over gay marriage. Marriage equity, as we like to call it. Yes, yes, J.D. Hayworth, running against the grumpy old John McCain, apparently went on the radio to talk about what happens when the gays get married. So he's got to be our, audio daily double Moran nominee. Our good friend Maura clued me into this one, and I heard it earlier in the day, and I just thought, oh, my God, how does this guy not go right to the head of the class?
You see, the Massachusetts Supreme Court, when it started this move toward same-sex marriage, actually defined marriage. Now, get this. It defined marriage as simply, quote, the establishment of intimacy. Hmm. Now, how dangerous is that? I mean, I don't mean to be absurd about it, but I guess I can make the point of absurdity with an absurd point. I guess that would mean if you really had affection for your horse, I guess you could bury your horse. It's just the wrong
thing. Shoo, Wilbur.
And the only way to protect the institution of marriage is with that federal marriage amendment that I support.
Yeah, what a guy. J.D. Hayworth, birther, bagger, deather, tenther, booger eater, now adds horse luster to his resume. Now, never, you know, and never mind the fact that marriage licenses have to be signed. No, no, Mr. Ed can just do it with a hoof print. Get him up, Scout, indeed. J.D. Hayworth. Now, this is too good. I just... Remember, this is our audio daily double moran, so we got to get it twice. How could we not?
Absurdity with an absurd point. I guess that would mean if you really had affection for your horse, I guess you could bury your horse. It's just the wrong way to go, and the only way to protect the institution of marriage is with that federal marriage amendment that I support.
I said no, Wilbur, and no means no. Oh, there's a parody in there somewhere. Such a parody. A horse is a horse, of course, unless the horse... Oh, dear. So, there's another nominee. I mean, it is going to be an absolutely busy, busy day. You want another one? You want another one just for the sake of getting started? Dan Reel. Dan Reel. R-I-E-H-L. Dan Reel. He is a real live wingnut. You probably heard, and this is sad business, you've probably heard that Senator Harry Reid's 69-year-old wife and his 48-year-old daughter were involved in an ugly, ugly, ugly automobile accident. Mrs. Reid has a broken back and a broken neck. She is in bad shape. Well, what did Dan Reel, conservative, compassionate conservative right-winger, have to say? He said the following. This is our mean moran nominee. Okay, we've had a more... See, I think the way this works out is that we can... We're going to have to compartmentalize our morans. Because, my God, they are out and they are all over the floor like a dirty kitchen in the dark. Just scurrying like the little roaches they are. And Dan Reel said... Speaking of Mrs. Reed and Senator Reed's daughter, but particularly of Mrs. Reed. Actually put this out for public consumption. Didn't just think it. This is not a matter of his internal monologue coming loose or anything. These are the real words of a genuine, God-fearing Republican. I'm not sure I quite understand this, given that cost is so important as a burden to taxpayers when it comes to health care. If Democrats want so badly to abort babies because of it, why are we bothering with someone who has a broken neck and back at 69? It sounds to me like she's pretty well used up and has probably been living off the taxpayers for plenty of years to begin with. Aren't we at least going to get a vote on it? Senator Reed's daughter, Lana Reed Berenger, 48, who was driving the minivan, and his wife, Landra G. Reed, 69, a passenger, were both injured. Landra suffered a broken back and a broken neck in the crash. Berenger suffered minor injuries. Senator Reid's office said Thursday. I realize her crook of a husband and his pals in Congress have excluded themselves from the mess they're going to compel everyone else to join, but we're still paying the bills, are we not? I don't see that she's worth it at this point, frankly. I can't recall her ever doing anything for me. Come on, Harry! Do your civic duty! The nation's broke and counting on you, guy. Pull the plug and get back to work. And don't bill us for a full day today, either. This is no time to be sloughing off. Air freight her home. You can bury her during recess on your own dime. Or are you going to bill us for that, too? Meanwhile, Senator Reid has remained at his wife's bedside throughout the day this past Friday and returned to the Capitol in the late afternoon. John Amato posted, well, just getting in and out of the Senate and House office buildings is an ordeal. I mean, I'm surprised they don't have the full body scanners in there now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing because that was, I think it was like 99 when I went. And it was pretty, you could move around. I mean, they have security, but it was nothing like what I hear now.
Getting in and out of the buildings was, well, there's always a line because you got, and you know, it's really weird. The metal in your eyeglasses will not set off the metal detector, but the aluminum foil in a pack of cigarettes will. I don't know if it's terrorist aluminum in the cigarette pack or it, but yeah, that's the case.
Oh God.
So you're standing there, you know, everybody's wearing one of our ubiquitous I Love Mountains buttons. Buttons got to come off, and then the change in your pocket will go through the metal detector and not make you beep, but your belt buckle will set it off.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're waddling through the metal detector with your hands holding up your pants, just hoping they're not falling down, and you know, so that you're selling crack in the background or anything. You know, just And bless their hearts, you know, the security guards, you know, they're making the best of a bad situation. I think they'd rather be pounding a beat or something. But you know, they're sitting, you try to give them a smile and say, "Hey, guy, you know, I mean." And,
no, that must be so tedious at this point.
Oh, it's got to be mind-numbing.
And then you have to worry about the random terrorist that might just shoot you just because they're upset about some tax return or something.
Oh, believe you me, I had I took Ferg with me.
Oh, okay.
And I had to, I had a very, very serious father-son conversation with him about, son, these guys are going to be a little nervous. Because, you know, that 9/11 truther had just gone and shot up the Pentagon metro station. I said, son, keep your hands visible at all times. No joking. No kidding. These guys ain't funnin', and they will shoot you in a heartbeat. He was like, really, Dad? I'm a little nervous. I said, you should be. Don't be scared. Just be smart.
I mean, that whole thing just makes me think of, you know, Paul Mooney, that comedian?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
When he's talking about, you know, after 9/11, it's like, white people, welcome to our world.
Exactly. You know, everybody that doesn't have the little congressional pin on or look like a lobbyist, man, everybody gets the stink eye from the Capitol Police.
Oh, boy. Hey, listen, anyway, Thomas Jefferson is no longer worthy to study in American
history.
Social studies.
Right. But John Calvin is.
Yeah, but now you replace him with that freak. And what about the other one? They're going to bring him up, my favorite. Is that Jonathan Edwards?
Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God? Yes.
That's one of my favorites.
I love the fact that Phyllis Schlafly made it.
Oh no! You know, all of it is just so frightening. I mean, if it wasn't so disturbing because it's such a big state, it would just be funny, you know. But the spillover, because it's such a huge market, apparently those standards are just going to slip into other textbooks going elsewhere.
Oh, sure they will. Sure they will. And don't think for a minute that Texas doesn't know that.
Well, no, exactly. But the thing is, it's just stunning. And they didn't they want to get rid of the civil rights movement totally, but they couldn't quite do that?
Yeah, not quite.
But Reagan's more prominent now, and free enterprise.
Milton Friedman. Don't forget Milton.
And they're reading Hayek. I was like, hello?
Yeah, all of that. All of that. And, you know, John, you know, they call him John Calvin. But the fact is his name was J-E-A-N, Jean. And he was Swiss.
Yes. Yes.
He's not, hell, he ain't even American.
French, even. You know?
Oh, no. See, we'll have to have some historical revisionism, Sandra. He can't be French.
Well, I'm just saying that the reality is that, John, if you weren't picked to go to heaven, you're going to hell, Calvin, was, you know, on the French side of it.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, if our buddy Eugene Finnerman from FinnermanWorks.com was handy, he could lay out a whole I mean, Jean Calvin ordered the deaths of countless people. I mean, he was a witch, you know, he was a witch prosecutor, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's a horror show. I mean, the whole thing. Oh, my God.
It's love your ringtone.
Show. Oh, you know, it's too much. I just called to say a quick hi because I know you got something coming up, so I'm not going to obviously drone on. But I also am kind of a bit disturbed by Kucinich. They nabbed his ass and put him on the plane. What do you think? Is they showing him pictures?
You know, it's a little. Yeah. I know.
No, I mean, I don't. You know, so I'd be curious to see how that is going to play out because he was pretty much no, right?
Yeah, and I heard some not so veiled criticism of him at the Progressive Media Summit.
Oh no, it's been you know as I don't know who. Oh, coined it, but it's great. The professional left. Oh, I was dying. I'm like, that is perfect. You know what I mean?
The well-paid left.
Yeah, no, and it's just sort of, you know, because once again, Dennis Kucinich is consistent, and it's obnoxious for these Daily Coast people and all these other professional leftists are like going off the deep end about it. So he. Isn't for it. Obama dropped the public option for so-called Olympia Snow. Is he now going to bring it back for Dennis Kucinich?
It's a little crazy making. It really is. And you know, I saw an ad campaign out today from you know one of the organizations saying yes, there are 51 votes for the public option in the Senate.
Well, they ain't never had a vote. So how does it know? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, got to vote on it. You got to vote on it before you know if you got the votes.
Exactly. So, I mean, the whole thing is so rigged beyond belief, but I just thought it was interesting that, you know, you got these freaks talking about holding on a primary him. And as far as I can tell, I think Dennis Kucinich would rather just stand up for his principles and go out like that at this point. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be wrong. You know, if he decides to vote on it, I'm not, you know, whatever. But at this point, I'm...
Well, look, the whole Eric Massa thing was going down while I was, while I was gone, too.
Oh, shut the hell up. That would be all funny. I'm more concerned with this new Rahm Emanuel popping.
And they're swearing, you know, he wasn't even, you know, and what is it? He wasn't even in town that day.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But, you know, I'm sorry. I can see him doing that.
Yeah, me too. I don't, you know, any sort of anything that's derogatory about him, I'm more inclined to believe than not.
I'm kind of ashamed of myself for the. But you know, he's kind of proven that.
Oh, he's
he's a hatchet man. I mean, let's face it.
No. It's all hideous. And the health care bill, you know, also. The whole sort of, what are they trying to tell us, that all 30 million people will get access? Is that the latest song and dance?
Yeah, well, that's been the going number for a while.
And no more pre-existing condition, right?
That's what's being pushed.
Okay, but how is that going to be enforced? With a fine, right?
I believe so. Yeah, and the thing that's gotten me curious is I want to know what the Because I really hung my hat on the Medicaid buy-in, and I want to know what the status of that is and Bernie Sanders' rural health centers.
Well, how much do you want to bet if the fine on the corporations for covering people is less than what they're going to be charging us if we don't buy into it?
I wouldn't take the bet, Sandra. I would not take the bet.
And how much do you want to bet that if it's $5,000 or $7,000 or $10,000, some companies, they look at that and say, that's the price of doing business and still...
Right, and, you know, we'll write it off on our taxes.
Yeah, I don't trust none of this because there's no cost control, you know. But anyway, listen, I'll call back some other day, I guess, and let you get on with the show.
All right, well, don't be a stranger, and, you know, we'll get some of the... Well, the technical stuff is working out better than we'd hoped, but, yeah, we had a little crash of the website, and... I'm getting used to a new way of doing things here. But I think, let's yak later in the week.
Okay.
All right. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. And we're going to take a minute while I get Bob Furtick on the phone. I think that, like I said, should be a very interesting conversation. So stand by for that. And we'll be back in just a matter of a couple of minutes. You are listening to... I'm sort of getting used to doing this again. You spend a week out of the saddle, and it's almost like, you know, you're a little rusty getting back on the bicycle. But nah, I'm thinking, this is all right. This is all right. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to The Horn. And I'm Bob.
I've been up around the stratosphere at 31. Those wings you can't see. I've been shredding on the mountains of the moon on a weekend wind. I've been looking out for life on Mars, ground control to Major Jim. All these things could be yours too if you just take another point of view. Everybody's got a pair of wings they can't see. I got wings that you can't see. I have wheels on my feet. Well, high, I feel free on these wings you can't see. I don't need a runway, I've got you here in my palm. I can buzz. In the water and tiny beach bars, and all because of these wings you can't see. I've got wings that you can't see. I have wheels on my feet. Well, high, I feel free on these wings.
Just had to share that tune with you. A little something from Jimmy Buffett called Wings from the 2009 release Buffett Hotel. Penned by a friend of the show and all-around brilliant musician and artist, Will Kimbrough. Will Kimbrough. And just, he's almost indescribable. On the phone with me right now, getting back to business. On the phone right now, we are about to be joined by Bob Furtick. Bob is a founder of Democrats.com, and as I described to you earlier, has been involved in a lot of liberal and progressive activism, both online and real world. And at this point in time, I think it's safe to say that Bob is actively interested in the Citizens United decision and the pernicious effect of allowing all that corporate money into our electoral process. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, this is a real joy. Let me just get started with a general. I think everybody, I'm sure, as a matter of fact, that everyone in the Horn audience is well aware of what the Supreme Court did to us via the Citizens United decision that basically said unlimited corporate money for unlimited reasons forever, just to be a little bit flip. But it really was an opening of the barn doors to let all the horses out. And, you know, the other side can outmoney us any day of the week. With that as perspective, what are the potential remedies?
There are two sets of remedies. There are short-term remedies and there are long-term remedies. The long-term remedies are a constitutional amendment, because that's the only way you can effectively overturn a Supreme Court decision. And that constitutional amendment could be simply to restrict the First Amendment to people, not corporations. Or it could be written more broadly to declare that corporations are not purposes for any purpose, are not persons for any purpose in the Constitution. That would include the First Amendment, but all the other amendments as well.
And that second alternative would essentially overturn that little piece of dictum in what, the 1880-something case, Santa Clara versus Union Pacific Railroad, where this whole idea of corporate personhood arises, right?
Exactly. And we need to do that for a variety of reasons, but, you know, there's a lot of focus on Citizens United, and so we should definitely start with the First Amendment. But what's more urgent at the moment is the shorter term solutions. And there are several. The one that Congress is focusing on, the bill is called Schumer-Van Hollen, Chuck Schumer, the senator, and Chris Van Hollen, the representative. And they're working together. They're leaders. They're Democratic leaders. And, they have the support of the leadership, and they are hoping to move a bill through in the next couple of weeks before the campaign season really takes off. It really has to be signed into law by Memorial Day before they go away for Memorial Day. And that bill will have a couple of key provisions. First is disclosure, so that any corporation that's spending money on campaigns, its executive would have to take responsibility for the ad, just the way candidates take responsibility for their ad. The second provision would exclude foreign corporations or U.S. subsidiaries of foreign corporations. And the third provision would require shareholders to approve all expenditures by corporations.
And, well, what you mentioned a moment ago about getting the foreign money out of the political and campaign process, I'm seeing a divergence of opinion. The right wing saying, well, you know, that's overblown, and our side saying, oh no, it isn't. Is there anything out there to suggest that that foreign corporations wouldn't be interested in getting involved in our electoral process?
Well, if we throw the doors wide open and say our Congress is for sale to the highest bidder anywhere in the world, any corporation would be foolish not to join in the auction, whether it's a U.S. corporation or a foreign corporation. So, you know, there's no way to know what's in the minds of corporate executives around the world. And you might speculate, but you don't know. I don't know. The law, as you said, throws the doors wide open. So we have to anticipate the worst. we have to anticipate the worst corporate executives, the worst corporations, throwing as much money as they can to buy our Congress.
With that in mind, are you satisfied that the Schumer-Van Hollen bill does enough?
No, and I'm working diligently to strengthen it, and we need everybody's help. The disclosure provision I expect will be strong. I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't actually been released yet. But I saw Senator Schumer on Thursday, and he assured me that it would be strong. The other two provisions that I'm looking at, the foreign and the shareholder approval, need to be as strong as possible. I think if we did a poll and asked Americans whether there should be any foreign corporate money in U.S. elections, I think the answer would be a resounding no. So the Supreme Court did not address that question. They specifically said, there are laws prohibiting foreign spending. We're not going to second-guess those laws in this decision. So since those laws remain good law, but they only apply to foreign corporations and foreign persons, they don't apply to U.S. subsidiaries because they just ignored that.
Precisely.
You know, so we need to drill down on that subsidiary thing and get as close to zero as we can. And that's a tricky business because most companies don't know how many foreign owners they have. If it's a multinational company and there are shares sold around the world, they don't know. But we can look at individuals who own large blocks of stock.
Well, for instance, the particular Saudi prince who owns the largest non-controlling interest of News Corp.
Exactly.
Under this News Corp, as the law, with the status following Citizens United, News Corp could pour tons in, could it not? And it could conceivably be his money.
Prince Talawal, yes, owns 7% of News Corp. And, yes, he could, since he's not the controlling shareholder, obviously Rupert Murdoch is, Yes, Saudi money could pour in through the News Corp, and they could be running ads on every other network. They don't even have to pay for the ads on News Corp, on Fox, but they could fill the airwaves of CNN and NBC and all the other networks.
Well, that obviously that's disturbing to you and Democrats.com. It's incredibly disturbing to me. That's the short end. You mentioned the constitutional amendment process. What's involved with that? I mean, are you talking particularly? I'm sure you've read what Donna Edwards introduced. Is that sufficient?
There are several versions. There are two websites. One is called freespeechforpeople.org, and that's where the Donna Edwards amendment is. And there's another site called movetoamend.org. Which is going more broadly after corporate personhood. They haven't actually drafted legislation. They wanted to have it crowdsourced. They wanted people to have input first. So there are two approaches. We support both of them. It's a long process to get a constitutional amendment. We haven't done one in a while. It takes a two-thirds vote by each House of Congress. That's for Senate watchers. That's 67 votes, not 60. We're all obsessed with 60,
right.
So it's an even steeper climb to get to 67 in the Senate, and the House isn't much better when you start. And then after that, it goes out to the states, and three-fourths of the states have to ratify the amendment.
Over the course of 7 years.
Or whatever time limit. There was the most recent amendment took 200 years to approve. So there doesn't have to be a time limit. People remember the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, which did have a time limit, but it doesn't have to. So, there's 80% in the polls that oppose the Supreme Court ruling, and when you have 80% support for something, it is conceivable to pass a constitutional amendment.
What do you make of Chief Justice Roberts whining about being called out by the president in the State of the Union? Is that merely posturing or what?
I think it belies a really imperious attitude of Justice Roberts, that he thinks he's supreme to the President of the United States. That term supreme in Supreme Court, I think, has gone to his head. The Supreme Court is a co-equal branch of government. Nobody would object if the President criticized the Speaker of the House or the Senate Majority Leader. And so constitutionally, the three branches are equal, and the President has the right to criticize not the person, not the justices personally, which he did not do.
Correct.
But to criticize the substance of their decision, which is exactly what he did. So I think Justice Roberts is the one with the attitude problem, and he really ought to think twice about it. And if he doesn't like being held accountable for a decision that's immensely unpopular because he didn't like the fact that the members of Congress stood up and cheered when the President criticized the ruling, well, he should have thought about that before he handed down the ruling.
Well, given the cheering that we saw that evening, what prospects do you give? First off, the Schumer-Van Hollen bill. Obviously, I would think it'll be easier to get it out of the House. But what the question seems always to be, and you know, you heard it on Wednesday the same as I did in D.C. What about getting it through the Senate?
Is broad enough support. When we say 80% support, they're looking to a few moderate Republicans, Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, Scott Brown in Massachusetts. They think they can get a Republican or two to be a co-sponsor. And it's not an ideologically divisive issue. It's certainly not a big government issue. It's conceivable, but it will take all of us. When the health battle is over, I am fully expecting Move On and Democracy for America and other big groups to switch over to this issue and put the same kind of support behind this as they have put behind health care, which is a tremendous grassroots power.
And just to reiterate, this bill has not been introduced in either house, correct?
That's correct.
As your understanding is concerned, will it be introduced concurrently, or is it going to start in one and move to the other?
I think it will be concurrent. I don't know the precise mechanics of it. I believe it will, in the Senate, where I spent more time, they're waiting for a Republican co-sponsor before they introduce it. I just not as up to speed in the House on what the timetable is.
Okay. Well, let's back up for a minute and just talk about the history leading up to this Citizens United decision. There were some 60 years of law and Supreme Court precedent behind the basically this Citizens United decision swept away. How can we square, because I've read the decision and I'm sure you have as well, it doesn't seem to stand on a whole lot of legal firmament, if you will, in terms of case citations and the like. How can you square, or how can the court square, I know you're not in the business of it, but how could the court possibly square that decision with any regard for the principle of stare decisis?
Well, they can't. And they can throw some words at it that pretend to reconcile it, and they did in the majority. They said that when a precedent is broadly in conflict with other principles and precedents, that the precedent that's out of line has to move, has to be put aside. So that's the theory behind it. But of course, they had a result. This is a results-driven court. Everything conservatives do these days, and since Ronald Reagan, everything they do has been results-driven. So they knew where they wanted to end up. just as with Bush versus Gore in 2000. They knew they wanted to appoint George Bush. They knew they wanted to throw out 175,000 Florida votes that had never been counted, even though the Florida Supreme Court ordered a manual recount. The U.S. Supreme Court, the five Republicans on the court led by Antonin Scalia, had made up their minds they were going to appoint George Bush. They were not going to count those ballots. And so they came up with whatever rationale they needed to pretend that they were that there was some law behind what they were doing, but it was just thuggery. And that's the same thing as with Citizens United. It was just a brute force decision because they had five votes and they could do it, so they just rammed it down our throats, to use common parlance in Washington these days.
And here's my problem. I recall, and I'm sure that you were involved in this to a certain degree. I recall being rather significantly opposed to the appointments of Chief Justice Roberts, and really opposed to Justice Alito. But in the course of following those hearings, Bob, I kept hearing them do this bow and scrape to the notion of stare decisis. And how much regard they had for it, and how it's the guiding principle of the common law, and all of that. I know they attempted to square it, as you described in the decision, but when it gets right down to it, didn't those two guys take an oath in Washington, D.C. before the Senate and just perjure themselves?
Well, that's a very good question. I was at the hearing last week, and our own inspector asked the last set of questions, and he was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in his Republican days, and when at least one, I'm not sure if both of those nominations were confirmed, and he asked the Republican witness at the hearing last week, what was the purpose of those confirmation hearings if the witnesses simply lied their way through the hearings? And he left that question out there. He didn't call it lie, but it was clear to everybody that's what he meant. If they say one thing to get confirmed and then do the opposite once they are confirmed, what's the point of those hearings? Well, perhaps the only point of those hearings is to create a record for an impeachment.
And that is exactly where I was going, Bob. Federal judges, not necessarily at the Supreme Court level, but federal judges have been impeached in this country, and it's not nearly with the rarity that a president or a vice president or any of those sorts of officers have been impeached. Is there anything to be gained out of at least rattling that saber?
Well, it's certainly appropriate for us citizens to rattle that saber. Whether it would be appropriate for members of Congress to rattle that saber, they would probably say no. We went through the effort to impeach President Bush and Vice President Cheney. We led that effort after the Downing Street memos proved that Bush and Cheney and all of them lied about the Iraq War. And we were told then by the leaders that it would be counterproductive to begin an impeachment process, because the lesson they learned from the Clinton impeachment was that the public rallied behind the target of the impeachment politically, even though it wasn't really true.
I was going to say, wasn't that topical as opposed to personal? I'd go back and forth between how much credit I'm willing to give the American people. I guess I'm willing to give them a little more credit on this one.
When President Clinton was impeached, the American people looked at the charges and said, hey, wait a minute. It was bad behavior, extremely bad behavior, but it was not a high crime or misdemeanor as the founders intended. It was not bribery or treason or anything at that level. So the American people did rally behind President Clinton, and that's when MoveOn.org got founded. Their petition said, let's censure him and move on. And thus was launched the most powerful progressive organization we have. But the Supreme Court impeachment of Justice Roberts or Justice Alito for, in effect, lying to Congress in their confirmation hearings, I don't think there would be tremendous sympathy for them. But, of course, the right-wing noise machine would rally behind them. That goes without saying.
And given the short shrift that they gave the attempt to get corporate money out of politics in, you know, the subject of the decision in Citizens United, has anybody done any homework as to the perceived constitutionality of the Schumer-Van Hollen bill?
Well, yeah, there's no question disclosure would be perfectly constitutional. The only opponent of disclosure on the Supreme Court right now is Clarence Thomas, who believes that anonymous political spending should be a protected right, but he's alone in that at the moment. The provision on foreign spending, as I said earlier, the Supreme Court specifically said we are not going to review the current law that prohibits foreign spending in U.S. elections. So that part is still constitutionally sound. And the final provision on shareholder approval of corporate spending, corporations are not owned by their managers. Corporations are owned by the shareholders. And there's a provision going through the financial reform bill that was just introduced today by Senator Dodd, which includes a provision called say on pay, which means that executive compensation, bonuses, and things like that should be something that the shareholders should be able to vote on. So we can take the same principle of say on pay and apply it to politics, what I call say on smear. Because if you look at how corporate money is spent on these kinds of independent expenditure campaigns, which is what we're talking about, we're not talking about direct contributions.
Right.
We're talking about independent expenditures. These are all these horrible negative attack ads. For example, the Swift Boat ads were an independent expenditure to smear John Kerry. So if a corporation, whether it's Exxon or any other, or Apple or any other corporation, decided to smear Barack Obama in his next presidential reelection campaign, the shareholders ought to have a say. And that is also sound corporate law to give that power to shareholders.
And to reiterate what you just said, yeah, this is the unlimited spending, not direct spending on campaigns. But we have seen its pernicious effects. The other side of the argument that is frequently put forward is, well, but the unions can spend just as much money. The state of journalism today, it makes it sound like there are unions out there that are just clapping their hands and grinning with glee over being able to spend unlimited amounts. But the unions don't have the money anymore, do they?
No, and they never did. They could never. I mean, the biggest corporations make billions and billions of dollars. Unions, you know, their dues are mostly all accounted for and spent. When they get around to money for politics, if they have 10 or 20 or 30 million left over for politics, that they're doing well. So we're talking billions up against millions. It's not comparable. Also, as far as governance goes, the shareholders do not have much of a say over what management does.
Well, and I was going to mention that as well because, frankly, the least democratic institution in the United States is a corporation, is it not?
Exactly. Compared to a union, I mean, there are unions. You know, some unions are better run and more democratic than others. But if a union were to endorse and throw tens of millions of dollars behind a candidate that the rank and file opposed, that leadership would not last very long. They have to be responsive. There are elections, and there are, you know, vigorously contested elections within unions. Unlike corporate management elections and board elections, which are rarely contested in any way.
Well, all that having been said, I would assume that I don't know what you've done with Democrats.com thus far, but You guys bill yourselves as the aggressive progressives, and wow, do I respect that. But it's not too soon to get at, to start getting after the House and Senate members to get behind this bill when it comes up, is it?
Oh, no, no, no. It's absolutely urgent that we all take action now. I've been reviewing the House Financial Services Committee list to see who's with us and who isn't. We need everybody to start contacting Congress. I'm going to get a petition up on Democrats.com very quickly that will help people to send the same message to as many members as we can.
Well, then I think you can count on the activist audience of the Horn to get behind that with their own various senators and members of Congress. Bob Furtick, thank you very much for the time you've spent with us this evening. Let me ask, after this issue, what's next? What's next on the Democrats.com hot plate?
Well, this issue is going to keep us pretty busy through the next few years until we pass this constitutional amendment. I mean, this really goes to the heart and soul of whether we're a democracy or a corpocracy. And that's the fight of our generation, the fight of our lives. And I think that's gonna take a lot of our energy for the next few years.
Yeah, well, understandable. I ask that simply. It was kind of a loaded question or a bit of a setup. I know that you have a long and a laudable history working inside feminist politics and pro-choice issues. Is there any sort of mobilization regarding Bart Stupak as far as health care is concerned?
Well, we do pay attention and support as many other progressive efforts as we can, and there is a lot of blog effort to support a woman who is running against Bart Stupak in a primary, and Blue America just endorsed her yesterday, the day before, and so we will support that effort by Blue America. That's the obvious response. I mean, more than half of Stupak's constituents are women, and women are overwhelmingly pro-choice. And, to hold up the health care bill over this really outrageous demand that women can't even spend private money on insurance that would include abortion coverage is just outrageous. So I think he will be held accountable by the voters of his district.
I sincerely hope you are correct in that. And please keep us posted on the efforts with the Schumer-Van Hollen bill. I would love to be a part of getting that through and beginning to provide a remedy to that god-awful decision. And if you decide you want to mount an impeachment campaign, we are here 100% with you, Bob.
Awesome. That's fantastic to hear.
All right. Take care. And, again, thanks, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Bob, for all the great work you do.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bob Furtick from Democrats.com. Well, it's on your radar now. Schumer Van Hollen is what it will be known as in the collective parlance of the collective parlance of political speak, I suppose. It is not, as Bob made clear, it is not a remedy in and of itself. But it will start to take the teeth out of that monumental, monstrous screw-up. And, you know, it's only a screw-up from our perspective. You know, what the rats did, the rats meant to do. The rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia, the rats meant to do what they did. They meant to open that floodgate. They liked the swift voting of John Kerry. Those nine, frankly, and I don't excuse the so-called liberals on the bench, although I don't believe that there is any such thing as a liberal jurist. The nine people on the Supreme Court don't care because they are designed by the Constitution to be utterly immune from politics. And I suppose there's a certain brand of right-wing jurist who, because he is immune from politics, likes to make politics nastier for the side that he ain't on. And that's exactly what Citizens United did. And all that decision did was pay some pretty sorry, lukewarm and thin lip service to Stare Decisis. You know how I am with my Latin pronunciation. and then reached an ends-based decision. And so at the very least, Schumer Van Hollen offers a beginning of a remedy. But as Bob notes, it is years long in the process. It's 3 minutes past 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. Still getting used to the daylight savings time change. I have no idea what time it is in Arizona right now, or Indiana for that matter. But at any rate, God, every time we go through a daylight savings time change, I'm reminded of that old that apocryphal statement attributed to some wise American Indian who said, only a white man would think that you can take cloth off the top of a blanket and sew it to the bottom of the blanket and wind up with more blanket. Yeah, no, it's not like more cowbell, not even a little bit. So, as I said, we're just creeping past the top of the hour. It's probably time that we should take some sort of a break. With that in mind, a last little funny here. It's just something to go giggling into the top of the hour with. I don't know if you saw this or not, but they're bringing out the big guns. Speaking of good liberals, they're bringing out the big guns to take down Alan Grayson. This was filed today. This particular story. Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, flew down to Florida on God knows whose nickel, but she brought her daughter Piper with her. You know, that's one of the ones that was named after one of the witches in Hocus Pocus or whatever that god-awful television series was. There was Piper and Scout Sky King, whatever. Piper was with her. And she stood up in front of the crowd in Alan Grayson's district and said, what can you say about Alan Grayson? Piper's with me tonight, so I won't say anything about Alan Grayson that can't be said around children. But thank you, Florida, for allowing candidates. I don't know how she got all this on the palm of her hand. But thank you, Florida, for allowing candidates in a contested primary to duke it out, don't you know, over ideas and principles and values, all with the same goal. And that is unseating those who have such a disconnect from the people of America. Really? Last I checked, the people of that district elected Alan Grayson to Congress. Are they not people of America? But anyway, the Mussolini went on. That's what the goal is here in this race against Alan Grayson, don't you know? Please fight hard and do this for the rest of the country. Fight hard and send a conservative to Washington, D.C. You know, there's nothing like having Sarah Palin show up to help your fundraising. I'm sure this has already garnered thousands and thousands of dollars for Congressman Grayson. He sent out an email to his supporters saying, I look forward to an honest debate with Governor Palin on the issues in the unlikely event that she ever learns anything about them. Scientists are studying Sarah Palin's travel between Alaska and Florida carefully. They hope to learn more about the flight patterns of that elusive migratory species, the wild Alaskan dingbat. Oh! Oh! You know, there's just something lovable about Alan Grayson. I remember a time when Democrats fought back against Republicans just like that. And you know what? I think Alan needs to go around the halls of Congress and say, see, they're calling me a liberal. Look, I haven't wet myself yet. It's okay, because I are one, and I like being one, and I'm proud of being liberal. They can call me liberal all day long, and that's fine, because, you know, I got the brains and the smarts and the mouth to come back with studying the migratory patterns of the wild Alaska dingbat. So, see, I got to be careful because it's Moran Monday. Because, remember, we have retired we have retired Sarah Palin, Mussolini. We have retired her from competition, right? Yeah, we have. So she can't be a nominee. But if she, if you could, she'd be right there. So at any rate, that's the first hour of the program. I'm back in the saddle. I'm getting this thing figured out again. You're listening to America's listener-supported, and I do mean listener-supported. We'll talk about that later. Liberal Voice, you're listening to the horn. Fire it up! 304-658-3333 or 877-443-2366.
American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, she gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. Say A, say M, say E, say R, say I. Gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind.
Stay away from me. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. This is the Horn on a Monday. I've been away from the microphone for far too long, but on a darn good, I've got a good excuse. And we were on as noble a mission as one can possibly be on, I think, working the halls of Congress to try to end the Appalachian apocalypse that is mountaintop removal. And for any of them who might happen to be listening this evening, a big old shout out, or as we like to call them here in the hills and hollers, a big old howdy to the folks that walk the streets and sidewalks and corridors of Congress with me and with Berg. You have our enduring respect, admiration, and friendship. And let me just say, of those 200 people who are in Washington D.C., don't be under the misimpression that that was all folks from Appalachia. There were, without a doubt, a whole bunch of us. But you know what? There were folks from all over the country, and they made it possible for us to get into various and sundry offices of Congress because they were constituents of the people we were trying to reach and trying to talk to. There were folks there from Idaho. There were folks from Hawaii. Can you imagine it? There were folks from Washington State, from Oregon, from Pennsylvania, from Minnesota, from Michigan, from Illinois. Our buddy Parson Brown was there with the Topless America Project, and they were going into offices. There were folks from, golly, Moses, where weren't folks from? And it's because of the pressure and the awareness that you all have built over the years as a part of this process, raising awareness. You never know who you're going to talk to and tell about mountaintop removal that is going to then be motivated to stand with us in Washington, D.C., and demand full citizenship for people in Appalachia, who at this point in time, as long as mountaintop removal continues, are not full citizens of the United States. We're something less. We're little colonial proles or something, suitable for poisoning, suitable for having our homes ruined, suitable for having our children's futures demolished before their very eyes. So if any of you, my comrades from last week, are listening, howdy! And to those of you who continue to press forward in the struggle from wherever you are, thank you. I know that several members of the Horn audience were emailing and calling various and sundry audiences, offices as we were going and knocking on the doors. And you know what? It felt really cool to say, if you will check your email right now, I can guarantee you there are constituent emails in your inbox right now telling your boss to go and do the right thing. You have no idea the weight that that carries. And on the day that mountaintop removal is ended, once and for all and forever, you will stand with us and say, we did it. We ended it. We stood up and we were patriots for all of America, not just some of it. You will have been an integral part in transforming Appalachia from sacrifice zone to sacred zone. It's pretty stirring in my book. Looking back to a little earlier in the evening, had a note from Kate saying, when I said there's Morans and then there's mean Morans, Kate said, you know, you need yourself a good Liberian. I don't know. You need yourself a good Liberian, because that's how we say it, it's a library. You need yourself a good Liberian to do your classifications and categories and some good Dewey Decimal numbers for an easy archive search. Yes! You know what we need to do? We need to Dewey Decimalize the Horn Archives over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. All those little dots and numbers and... Oh, I tried to get my head around it in 7th and 8th grade. Some of it stuck. Some of it stuck. Most of it didn't. 92 is still biography, isn't it? Just checking. But no, this is Moran Monday, and we've got a lot of Morans out there. I've got a particular Moran story that just, well, dear God, it got all over me. A story, well, you remember the 9/11 truther who shot up the... Who shot up the Pentagon? Went into the Pentagon Metro station, had a pair of 9mm pistols fully loaded and just went a little nuts. You know, a little funny in the head. Well, in the aftermath of things like that, they do these things, well, when they are competently followed up on, they do these little things called investigations. Right? Yeah. And part of that investigation sometimes involves finding out where stuff came from. Like the gun used in the crime, because when the truther attacked the Pentagon Metro station, it was in fact, yes, attempted murder. He wound up getting dead. It turned out to be more suicide by cop than anything else, but, you know, he went in with evil intent and intended to do more damage than he did. Well, part of any investigation would have to involve an analysis or an attempt to find out where he got the guns. And this is yet another Moran Monday nomination. Now the guy who did it came from California, but that's not where the guns came from. Mr. John Patrick Bedell, had in his possession two 9mm handguns. One of them was a Ruger, semi-automatic. On January 10th, he got a note from California authorities telling him he was prohibited from buying a gun because he was a little too crazy to own them. But then, 19 days later, he took a little drive to Vegas. Unfortunately, what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas like they promise. And he went to a gun show there. Guns, 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 come buy your guns. Guns, guns, guns. And that's what he did. He bought himself a handgun. A Ruger. At a gun show. From a private individual. No background check involved. But guns do still have serial numbers, and I'm sure it's a cause of great concern to the National Republican Rifle Association. And it had quite a history. It had changed hands among gun dealers in Georgia and Pennsylvania before it ever wound up on a table in Vegas, where some guy looked at Mr. Bedell and said, "Son, if you want a peacemaker, and you want to protect your freedom, this year 9mm semi-automatic Ruger is exactly what you need. See, Feeler, don't you feel good in the hand? Ain't it balanced just perfect? Oh, it's a fine, fine, fine piece of machinery. So the gunsmithing on it, oh, my goodness, look down the gun sights. Ain't no haze at the end of that. You see that? Yeah, that's right. And you know what? I can sell it to you for cheap. Vegas, baby. So we know that much was going on. But the question still arises, where did that gun ultimately come from? Where did that 9mm handgun ultimately come from? Well, here's the punchline. Came from the cops. No, it wasn't stolen or anything. The cops sold it and put it into the stream of commerce. The Memphis, Tennessee Police Department. Memphis! You know, where Dr. King was shot. The Memphis, Tennessee Police Department put it into the stream of commerce because they are, I'll be able to hear the screaming from here. They're required to, friends and neighbors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they certainly are. That handgun had once been in police custody in Memphis, Tennessee, the Memphis Police Department. They were in the evidence vault, but then the case was taken care of, and, well, the Memphis Police Department did what Tennessee law requires them to. No, really, requires them to. They sold it back into the stream of commerce so that a freak like Mr. Bedell could get it, buy it in Vegas, take it to Washington, D.C., and try to shoot up a metro station full of people who were innocent of whatever it was he was trying to make a point about. Mm-hmm. No background check. No fingerprints, no waiting period. What's that? What's that? You're bug spray crazy and you want to shoot up the Pentagon Metro Station and you can't wait 7 days? Son, come to Vegas. We got a gun here, came out of the evidence vault at the Memphis Police Department. If it was good enough for a crime once, it's good enough for a crime twice, son. Put your money on the table and walk away. The day before the Pentagon Metro Station shooting, Tennessee Governor Phil Bredesen signed legislation that revised Tennessee state law on confiscated guns. You see, before March 4th, if the cops confiscated a gun and the case was resolved and the gun didn't have to be given back to the true owner thereof, Tennessee law enforcement officials had two alternatives. They could destroy the firearm, or they could sell it. And the police departments use as a justification that, well, what we do is we sell these criminal guns, and then we trade them sometimes. We either sell them or we trade them, and then we get our other guns for our officers or buy things like bulletproof vests. That's right, because Reaganism in the United States has made taxation a crime so that instead of buying police officers' bulletproof vests on the retail or perhaps even wholesale market, never pay retail, the cops have gun auctions. So that they can pay for needed equipment. And like I said, before March the 4th, in Tennessee, in the state of Tennessee, law enforcement agencies had the option of either destroying the firearm or selling it. Now, after March 4th, in the state of Tennessee, right now, as you and I speak, and this obtains in other states as well, so don't just, look, that's that crazy Tennessee. Shoot. Since March 4th, law enforcement officials no longer have that option in Tennessee. And, no, They can only destroy the firearm. Doesn't matter if the firearm was involved in the mass slaughter of 100 people. Doesn't matter if it's a firearm that was carried into a Unitarian Universalist congregation by a right-wing Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage devotee in order to blow away the liberals. Doesn't matter. It's not the gun's fault. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Not the gun's fault. Doesn't matter what kind of heinous crimes have been committed with it. The only way that Tennessee officials are now allowed to destroy a firearm is if it is, and I quote, inoperable or unsafe. It has to be sold. It has to be put back into the stream of commerce. Guess what? It's not going to a gun store, odds are. There are people out there who buy, you know, who go around and buy these things and then put the markup back on them and sell them and get them back. Well, that's, I tell you what, that's a fine piece right there. What'd you say your name was, son? Mr. George P. Smith. Mr. Smith, what'd you say your purpose? Wait a minute, I'm not going to ask you what the purpose of your purchase is. That'd be unconstitutional. That'd be your Second Amendment right to arm bears. I ain't going to ask you what she's going to do. Are you set? No, I can't ask you if you're crazy either. You just put the money down. You put the money in my hand, son, and I'll put the gun in yours, and I don't care what for. It's what has to happen now. Not may happen. It is what must happen. To guns confiscated in the state of Tennessee as of March the 4th, 2010. So it seems obvious to me that we got a great big honking Moran Monday nomination for the legislature and the governor, Democrat though he may be, of the state of Tennessee for helping to make sure that more loonies, more crazies, more birthers, deathers, baggers, tenthers, truthers, and various and sundry other assorted, you know, booger eaters will get guns so they can shoot up people who have nothing to do with whatever it is they're bitching about. Yeah, at this point in time, you see, because of Reaganism, as I noted, instead of properly outfitting our police forces, who really do have legitimate police work to do. I'm not some sort of the pie-in-the-sky dreamer who thinks, well, you know, we're all just going to be happy someday. No, there are bad people. There are bad people out there for a variety of reasons. That's another debate. And we would like for our police to be able to address those issues and catch the bad ones when they do bad things and maybe even catch a few before they can do them. For instance, Mr. Bedell was, you know, crazier than a sprayed roach. As they say, I personally think he was as sane as you and me. Just happened to be a little, you know, radicalized by the single most dangerous terrorist threat in this country, and that is the American right wing. But because of Reaganism, our cops have been transferred from doing routine police work into being ticket writing, you know, revenue sources, tax collectors with funny hats, if you will, and gun dealers. Really? Do you realize that a law that says you can only destroy the gun if it's inoperable or unsafe, do you realize that raises that firearm up to an almost religious level? Anybody ever seen the great pains that a priest goes through? He's got his little hanky and they're done. He's done with the miracle of the mass and everybody's had a little swig of the wine and gotten the bland little cracker. And then when he's done, he has to, you know, just, you know, down the last, the backwash. Ooh, that's the one reason I'd never, the backwash. I couldn't be a priest. But then when he's done, he takes out his little special hanky and he wipes out the chalice and he polishes it up real good and he sets it there. And because you can't just take the blood of Christ and pour it down a drain somewhere, right? I mean, what happens? I've always heard that there's a special disposal for, you know, excess holy water and so forth. After it's done, had the miracle done over it and whatnot. Right? Well, this is like that. In the state of Tennessee, a gun is held, a firearm is held, an instrument of death and destruction is held in such high reverence that it can only be destroyed in the special circumstances of it being either unsafe or inoperable. If it can still kill, because of the reverence due and owing unto it as a sacred firearm under the Second Amendment to the Constitution, it must be put back into the sacred stream of commerce. And we're what kind of nation? What do they like to say? We're a Christian nation? Excuse me? Ron in Raleigh says, hey, Bob, I think Mr. Bedell had seen The Matrix one time just one time too many. Just saying. Yeah, I know. I know. So, let me see if I can square this up real quick, because this is somewhere we probably have to go later on. The rodeo clown, Lonesome Rhodes, or whatever you want to call him, that guy who let another man penetrate his rear end, never having known him before, Glenn Beck. No, it's true, he really did. After taking massive amounts of drugs. Yes. Glenn Beck says that if the creed of the church you attend has anything about it about social justice or civil justice or economic justice, that you are supposed to abandon your faith, abandon your religion, and run as far away as you can get from that particular church. Because, why? Oh, that's right, because social and economic justice are elements of progressivism, and that's the same thing as communism, which is the same thing as Satanism, so it's not really a church of the living God, it's a church of the living devil. Right, you've got that. But on the other hand, we can elevate a damnable firearm to the status of a religious icon. Now, see, dig it. I mean, just figure out how far this goes. Because remember, the District of Columbia got spanked over its handgun law, but this was at the Pentagon Metro Station, which actually sits within the Commonwealth of Old Virginia. I'm guessing this wasn't like some sort of Old West shootout where Mr. Bedell got shot in the hand and the gun went spring and flew away. The handguns that he entered that Pentagon Metro station with are likely still fully functional. And since they were seized within the state, the Commonwealth, I'm sorry, they get touchy about that, the Commonwealth of Old Virginia, guess what? Odds are that those tools of madness, mayhem, misery, agony, and death can go back into the stream of commerce, the holy, the sacred stream of commerce. Nice, huh? Maybe they can go back to Vegas, where they'll sit on some felt-covered, fold-out convention table, and another man can say to another disaffected white guy, some birther, bagger, tenther, deather, truther, booger eater, son, when you own this gun, you'll be taking a vital interest in protecting the constitutional rights of Merca. And you can do it for cheap. Now, I don't take no credit cards out of it. I only take cash. No checks neither. No debit cards, just cash. Cold, hard cash. Gold if you got it. And it won't matter, you see. It won't matter. It won't matter what he intends to do with it. It won't matter if he's sane or sober, drunk or utterly insane. It will not matter. Those handguns that were used in that crime may very likely be able to re-enter the stream of holy commerce and go out and be part of another attempt to end more innocent lives as more of these freaks become radicalized and start shooting. So let's see, we did our goofy morons, our mean-ass morons. What are these? Administrative morons? Gun-crazed morons? Gun-worshipping morons? I'm hard-pressed to say. I'm hard-pressed to say. But I do know that those laws that are operable in so very many of our sundry states contribute to heartbreak all over this country. The Associated Press did a little review. Yeah, yeah. Gene, weaponized morons. Yeah. Armed to the teeth morons. The Associated Press did a review back in December and found out that over the previous 2 years, 24 states, mostly in the, of course, South and West, have passed 47 new laws loosening gun restrictions. Oh, my God. John Timoney, he led Philadelphia and Miami police departments and served as New York's number two police official. Said he doesn't think it's a police department's place to be putting more guns into the market. He said, and I quote, "I just think it's unseemly for police departments to be selling guns that later turn up." He was once offered the chance to sell guns to raise money for the police budget. Look it! Why? And this, you know, this is the larger debate. This isn't just about guns. This is about where we find ourselves in 2010. This is about where we find ourselves in a country that has been so thoroughly mesmerized by the idea that taxation is evil, that we can't adequately fund our own police departments that are out there, what's the phrase, to protect and to serve. Timoney went on and said, obviously we always need the money, but I just said, no, we will take the loss and get rid of the guns. Meanwhile, back down in Memphis, a spokesman for the Memphis PD said, well, gun swaps are a way to save taxpayer money. I'm a taxpayer. So are you. Little romper room moment here. I can see your hands. Who here would rather have your police department adequately funded than having them out there hustling guns on the street so they can get body armor? Yeah, that's what I thought. And that's not the only gun coming out of Memphis. On January 4th, there was a courthouse shooting in Las Vegas. We talked about it. It was sold under a Tennessee judge's order, and the proceeds were given to the Memphis Area Sheriff's Office. The weapons first went to so-called licensed gun dealers. I know. Licensed gun dealers. The hell good is a license if it just means that you can put it on a felt-covered table in Vegas and sell it to the first homicidal maniac who walks by. The Ruger in question at the Pentagon Metro Station shooting had been in an evidence locker for years before it was taken out and sold. It was confiscated from a convicted felon at a 2005 traffic stop. You know, Sue points out, they have sales tax days in the South where people who buy guns on certain days won't have to pay any sales taxes on them. And those days are heavily promoted. On the other hand, in the South, why is there never a sales tax holiday for people buying, eyeglasses? Well, because eyeglasses have not been enshrined in the Constitution and made a part of a secular religious cult. God, guns, and guts made America great. You ever seen that bumper sticker? God knows I have. Handguns, shotguns, no matter. How many more? And you realize that trying to revise that law that was signed into effect on March the 4th in Tennessee, you realize that moving to revise that would be certain death, political death, to the politician who advanced the idea. Charming, huh? And it's not just disaffected freak right-wingers. It's anybody who wants or needs a gun. And there's a stream of commerce trail that goes back to police departments in this country. God, that's almost as if that is not Orwellian. That is Bradburyan. That's akin to the firefighters in Fahrenheit 451, who start fires instead of putting them out. And not to put too fine a point on it, it is all exclusively and specifically a function of the fact that we live in a society that has been so thoroughly mesmerized, as I said earlier, by the idea that taxes to support the things that we think are worth having in our society, police departments, fire departments, roads, schools, bridges, libraries, sidewalks, food fit to eat, drugs that won't kill you with the first pill you take, every one of those things is under assault by some godless, motherless, soulless, brainless, conscienceless, moralless, right-wing, repig-licking, flack because it's conservatism. You heard it in the Memphis police spokesman's statement. Oh, that's a way of saving the taxpayers' money. How much money did it save? Does it save a taxpayer when the taxpayer gets killed? Stunning. So I felt like you got in the function in the name of Moran Monday, and moreover in the name of just being aware. You probably ought to know about that. So it's 10 minutes before the hour. If you want to light up the phones, you are free to do so. Don't wait until 15 minutes before the program ends and then light up all six lines. Don't do that. Because then I can't get to all the calls and I feel guilty afterward. This is, after all, conversation radio. This is not a filibuster. What this is, by God, is the horn. And the horn is America's listener-supported liberal voice. That PayPal button needs a little love. Dial in 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
And hey, by the way, we're hitting the third hour a little bit early, giving you guys a chance to jump in if you want to. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4-HEAD-ON. Also on your nickel. 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And just as a general sort of poll question for the horn, audio sounds a little better, doesn't it? I think it probably is sounding a lot better, unless you tell me otherwise. You know, it's another one of those amazing little cases of just how hard people are willing to work to make this all go. I owe John Fox a humongous debt of gratitude for the hours upon hours that he spent with me last night as we pulled wires and rewired. And because you may have noticed it. I did, and it was driving me absolutely bazonkers. There was a hum in the system that I couldn't get rid of to save my soul. Well, the hum, just like the intro music there, is gone now. And it has everything in the world to do with John's willingness to contribute his particular and massive expertise to sorting through the studio wiring system here. And am I grateful. And like I said, I think you'll notice that the sound quality is dramatically better. We've still got a few more hours of this to do, but we will get it all done. You know, I got home late Thursday and then started fooling around here in the studio on Friday. There was no, you know, you can't do a Friday show and then just week's over. It just doesn't work that way. So I've been anxious for Monday to get here. But you know what? It's just a day in the life. And this is not the poor, poor, pitiful me part of the program. But you know what? One of the things that makes the horn special is the fact that we are all working stiffs. We have all worked for a living. We all know what it means to carry the American economy and God knows America's rich on our broken backs. And so when things come along and things happen, you know, you just look up and go, oh, good, I needed that. I got home from D.C. I didn't take my vehicle. That was generously provided. A bunch of us rode over together. Ferg, me, a few others. Got home and found out that the rusty red truck needs a tie rod. So that's being seen to. But here's the fun part. When I was driving the second vehicle of necessity down, because you don't want to drive a truck with a near broken tie rod end. Mm-mm. That thing was just a disaster waiting to happen. When I drove, right before I got to the mechanic's place, that one conked out. And so we got a tow chain and dragged it over it. So both vehicles are sitting at a repair shop right now. Oh, joy. It's another day in the American working class. But you know what? I'm lucky insofar as I don't have a 9-to-5 job that I have to get up and go to every day. Because my whole world is what we do here. But that kind of thing, American workers literally live on a frayed shoestring. And it's that absence of give a damn about that fact on the part of the right wing that is so infuriating. Even though that's how they've always been, it's still no less infuriating. What happened to my vehicles today? Happens all over this country. And when somebody has to get up and get to work the next morning and there's no vehicle to get them there, that's the end of them. That can be absolute devastation to a working family. A transmission going out? Forget it. You can lose your job, or you can lose both jobs. You know, working families, even the ones with work, don't have it easy. You know, we have the lowest savings rate in the entire world, or at least in the so-called developed world. You know, because we have to give all our money to the credit card companies because that's what, you know, keeps. Hey, we got to keep those Wall Street banksters in. We got to keep them in lobsters, don't we? I mean, God, if they go without lobster at least once a week, they're done. I mean, I couldn't have that on my conscience, could you? It's incredibly disturbing to see how narrow the margin is between success and failure, and we're kind of dealing with that here on a separate level because, well. I heard a commentary from I saw a clip from Bill Maher over at Crooks and Liars the other day, earlier today, I should say. I guess from last Friday's program where he was talking about all the teachers being fired at that one school in Rhode Island and the Obama administration's support for it. And Bill Maher made the casual observation of, well, you know, let's not fire the teachers, let's fire the parents. And you know what? I know that there are a lot of parents out there who either actively or passively neglect their children. I give myself hell for my qualities as a father because that I just subject myself to that kind of scrutiny. But when Bill Maher said that, when I saw him say that, and it was just a clip, but he wasn't out of context. I saw the whole thing. It was sort of distressing to me because it lumped all parents into one big boat. Don't fire the teachers, fire the parents. In an America that has been utterly and hopelessly shaped for the past 30 years by Reaganism, in which an American worker cannot work enough, cannot give enough of him or herself to corporate America, and at the same time is berated on a constant daily basis by the right wing talking about, find time for your son, be a better dad. When do you want him to be that better dad? Between jobs one and two or between jobs two and three? But that's the economy we live in. That's the economic model that is at play in the United States today, period. End of sentence. And so when I hear, don't fire the teachers, fire the parents, that gets under my skin. And yeah, particularly so. And again, this is not the me portion of the program, but I guess it is. I've mentioned on the program that here's the story. A few months back, we went to the polls here in this county where I live because the state, the county board of education and the state wanted to build a Franken school. You know, this giant school that was going to be composed of students from different schools that they were going to shut down. One of them was our high school that's 6 miles up the road. They were going to consolidate it with three other schools from literally all over the county. My kids were going to wind up with a two-hour bus ride each way. Well, drive them to school, Bob. Sorry, the cars are broke! No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not kidding. The cars really are broke. There's a great Drive-By Truckers song out there that says, never say your car is broke. It's broke down. But anyway, my kids would have had a two-hour bus ride to and from school every day, and they would have been eliminated from any hope of ever participating in any kind of extracurricular activities because it's impossible to go back and forth, do a 40-mile round-trip drive, every day and sustain that. It's just not possible. So it wasn't just me, it wasn't just Agnes, it wasn't just us. 90%, I think, of the voters in this county went to the polls and told the County Board of Education, hell no! We don't want a Franken school. Our children have a right to a decent education near their homes. Because, see, money's getting tight because the depopulation that has been brought about by things like mountaintop removal and the economic squeeze that's always on Appalachian people, is allegedly difficult for the school to maintain all of its schools. But see, there's a bit of a joker in the deck there. Because again, it goes back to Reaganism and this idea that asking people to pay for the services they receive is somehow, akin to a religious heresy. That we don't dare talk about ponying up the bucks it takes to provide meaningful government on the part of we, the people who make that government up. So what happened? Well, the state of West Virginia, after we rejected their Franken school, came in and said, well, you guys are just a failed school system and we're taking you over. And they got this little punk-ass bastard who came out of McDowell County when they declared that county a county school system a failure. That guy went in there and built a Franken school that they didn't want, and now he's been appointed to come into Fayette County and build a Franken school here so he can ruin the education of my children. And guess what? They're going to build the Franken school whether we want it or not. And it's up to us to fight it. But see, they say the school system has failed because they don't want to say what they really mean. The school system didn't fail. It hasn't failed. I know a lot of people who are sending their kids to the schools around here, and while we would like to have better, we've never had better in this county because we're on the wrong side of the river. We're on the wrong side of the mountain. Not the wrong side of the tracks, wrong side of the mountain. We'd like to have better, but we can't, because if it's for us, there's no money. But what they've said to all of us with this your school system has failed business, well, and it's getting said all over the country, and there really is a point to this, because I want to give a little bit of credit to the Obama administration for actually having had the nerve to stand up and say that, in fact, No Child's Behind Left is not working, And the Obama administration has called for big changes in No Child's Behind left. But it'll be too late for my family. What they dare not say, what these punks in the State Board of Education dare not say, what they'd like to say, but dare not because it is political, is you parents have failed. And I personally don't take kindly to it, and I don't appreciate it. Because Agnes has stayed up late, and I've done what I can to try to teach our children outside of school, and the teachers that my children have had have largely been dedicated teaching professionals. And they have not failed. What they have had to do is to teach to us a miserable, meaningless, standardized test that precludes the teaching of vital life skills information, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Nope, got to teach the test. And the test is the only measure of whether or not there's been a failure. Under No Child's Behind left, it was designed to do this. Over half the schools in the United States are failing, quote unquote. I know a rigged game when I see one, and I don't take cards in them. But the first chance I get, because, you know, I don't talk about being an activist. God, by God, I try to go out and I do it. First chance I get, I'm gonna stare down one of these rat's-ass rotten human beings from the State Board of Education, and I'm going to dare them to look me in the eye and tell me that I'm a failure as a parent. Because that is what they have said. Your school system has failed is code for looking at me, my wife, and all the other hardworking parents around here who bust their ass, who show up, who staff the concession stands and the volunteer activities for the schools and do and give and go. Look them in the eye and say, you're a failure. And you don't deserve to have a school in your community anymore. I will look them in the eye and dare them to say it to me. Because there may be a lot of reasons to take issue with how we raise our children. I'm sure most of the people in this community would much prefer that we had our children in some little religious institution every Sunday morning. Sorry, we don't work that way. But neither I nor most of the people I know around here or see from other schools are failures. But when you say our school system has failed, you say that we have failed. And Bill Maher proved it Friday night. And I didn't take any too kindly to it. So there's that. 12 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones. Got a couple of lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333 on your nickel. Let's see what's shaking. Hey, oh, dadgummit. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Well, I know our schools down here have been going bad for a long time. And one thing they've done down here, I believe it's in Hillsborough County, they're cutting out a lot of school buses. And you already have children that are having to walk to school, you know, if you're so close and all. That's been going on for a long time. And they just told the people, they said, just have to find another way. You know, it's like, oh, well. It's just, like you said, you know, people are, you just go through all this stuff. It's just one thing after the other. And I found out that also down here they changed the rules about getting driver's license, and you have to have all kind of proper identification. You got to have a real birth certificate, you know. And a lot of people have been turned down. I know one person who had to go like about four times. They kept wanting more and more information. And I feel like that they can't.
Well, how dare anyone say that a school system is failing when the school system is a creature of theirs? It's 8 years of the Bush administration that led to these failures, Juanita. You know what I mean?
I know. Actually, before then.
How do you want
When Bush, Daddy Bush was in, they claimed that they were, you know, were doing something about education. But I worked for an educator at that time, and I found out a lot of what he was doing.
Well, you
and
know,
the Democrats
all you,
got blamed for it.
All you have to do is go back and look at the Republican platforms of the past, Juanita, and you will see a plank that says destroy, eliminate, remove the United States Department of Education.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how are we going to measure success for our children when what goes on in Texas has gone on in Texas and will not stay in Texas, when Thomas Jefferson has been removed from their world history standards on Enlightenment thinking and replaced him with John Calvin?
But you were talking about what Bill Maher said. You know, Bill Maher's clever, but he's not always right. You know, and I can see why that would be upsetting to you, because, you know, it's kind of a cutesy thing to say, but it doesn't solve any problems, you know. But I kind of forgot what I was talking about.
happens to me all the time.
Go ahead.
No, please, you.
Last night I was watching these shows. Sometimes you just turn something on and you just think, I don't watch this, and then you do watch it anyway.
Sure.
And it was about this up in Philadelphia. It was showing people whose cars had been towed and how they were trying to get them back. And they were so strict. And I just wept for these people trying to get their cars back. Cause you know, you've been there, done that. You know, I understand what you're saying about your vehicles, you know, been there, done that. We could all write books on the stuff you have to put up with just to have some way to go.
Right.
But, anyway, this one girl, they had got her car in, and she had all her papers, you know, and she had paid all the fine and everything. And she was supposed to go the next day. She was supposed to go to Washington, D.C. to start on training for a new job. Well, they wanted her insurance card, and it was out of date. And they said, oh, no, we can't, you know, and that, it was on a Saturday, too. She said, oh, no, said you can't get it, you know, because your insurance is not up to date. And she said, well, actually, I have paid. I just haven't got the new card yet. And she said, well, you can call. She had State Farm. She said, you can call them. And she said, on Saturday, she said, yes, they're open 24 hours. Well, she called and found out that, no, they weren't open. They were just, and she was just getting frantic. And she said, finally the woman, you know, told her, well, maybe you could call your agent or something. And she called her agent. Well, she actually had paid her bill. You know, she'd paid for it. She just hadn't got the new card. It took a while, they finally faxed it to the place, and she did get her car. But they put her through the mill, and every time they turn around, you know, somebody said, well, I've got to have my car. And they'd be paid for everything. They just didn't have all the papers that would suit them. And she'd say, the woman that worked there said, well, you know, let me ask my supervisor. And the supervisor would come out and be just real, you know, hateful. And I don't even see what the point was that she did that. But I don't know, just think about the things that we have to put up with. And I think about it more and more, you know, with my thing with the county. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But what are we going to do, Bob? Something's got to change. We've got to have a voice.
Well, we absolutely do, Juanita, but you know, maybe that's kind of what I'm getting at. We have to have a voice. We have to have a voice, but that voice has to be our own.
That's what I mean.
We have to be willing to stand up and speak out, and to do so unabashedly, unafraid, and without regard for what somebody might gossip about us in church on Sunday. You know, I'm willing to look these people at this hatchet man in the eye and tell him that I know what his game is and why he's here.
Yeah.
And that I will be blasted if I'll stand still for him calling me and the parents in my community's failures, because that is what they have done.
Yeah.
Because parental involvement is in fact one of those criteria, unless they've been changed, and I don't think they have. Is one of those criteria in whether or not a school is failing or passing. But all of this is designed to create failed systems. It's just like what Bob Furtick was talking about with the Citizens United decision. It is ends-oriented decision making.
Yeah.
The No Child's Behind left was created in order to create failing schools, in order to create the impression of failing schools.
Right.
So that,
right.
Lo and behold, what happens? We don't have them yet, and we're one of the few states that doesn't, but we will eventually in West Virginia have those godforsaken, for-profit, privatized, with public money, charter schools.
Yeah.
And there is nothing to be said for them. They don't educate any better. They just take public money and put it in private pockets.
Well, I do know that they've been pushing for those. I was working for the educator that... And I learned quite a bit that I didn't already know about, just personally, about the educational system. But anyway, that was Poppy Bush. That's when I started working there. Was Poppy Bush was the president, and he was pushing for that. And I never heard of it till I had gone to work there. And that also something Education 2000, that was his. But you know what? The Democrats got blamed for it.
Oh, well, that's because we're very good at standing around letting ourselves be whipped.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know what these children down here... These roads are very dangerous, and I'm sure there are where you live, too. These little kids having to walk to school, it's just not right. I mean, I'm not talking about a short way. I'm talking about a long way. And them just saying, well, oh, you know, you just have to find another way. Well, everybody can't find another way. Everybody doesn't have another way.
You know, I saw a great editorial cartoon the other day, Juanita, and it showed some Republican in sort of a split screen editorial cartoon saying, "Well, you know, people just have to pick themselves up by their bootstraps."
Oh yeah.
And then the next panel showed bootstrap store closed due to economy, and then across the street was bootstrap factory moved to China.
That's pretty good. That's a good one. But And I even saw a show where this guy had had some kind of museum in his home for years. Well, the county decided that he needed a permit for it. He decided he wanted to have to pay $400 to have his museum. So he was trying to sell stuff. But, you know, those are kind of sound like small things, but they're not. All these things add up. And... It's like beating your head against a wall.
Well, you know, I once read a poem, and I can't remember. Maybe it was Richard Wilbur or somebody like that. The poem said, you know, it's not the big things in life that break you. You know, it's not the massive one-time disaster that really gets you. It's all the little ones that add up. It's sitting there and going through the madness of sorting through receipts at tax time. It's the flat tire that happens on the freeway at 5:30.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that make it, that eventually, those are the things that are most prone to make Americans just gone. And I understand it because it was about an hour before showtime, when I drove down in the one vehicle to see about getting the other one fixed, and the one vehicle I was in dropped dead.
Oh, boy.
And
have you found out what's wrong with it?
No, no idea. I know what's wrong with the first one, so we're gonna fix what we know is wrong.
Yeah.
And then whatever the next one is going to be, God only knows how much, and you know.
The new vehicles, who can afford that? You know, to have insurance, and then you don't know if you're getting a lemon. My son bought a brand new truck, and it was a lemon from the word go, and they wouldn't do a thing about it. And,
and the lemon, the consumer protection lemon laws are incredibly difficult to negotiate if you can do it at all.
Yeah.
They're written ostensibly as consumer protection, but they're written so that you have to have the vehicle back for exactly the same problem every time. And the dealerships are, they're under orders from Detroit or wherever to, make sure you find something else wrong. So
well,
that way it's not a lemon law.
The dealership wouldn't fix that because they said it was his fault when it went dead on him while he was driving. And fortunately, he was driving in town. He wasn't on the highway. He'd been going really fast.
Well, yeah, so, lucky for me, I was I was 10 feet from the garage. I was literally getting ready to turn into the garage when it died on me.
Ain't that the way it goes, Bob?
Well, I was grateful. I was grateful to the vehicle for dropping dead there. Ron in Raleigh picking up on the Republican work ethic and their position on unemployment. After I said it the first time, he said, "Bob, your vehicles are just lazy. And they don't want to work. If you keep putting money into them, they'll just sit there."
Well,
that kind of repig licking logic is utterly unassailable, Juanita.
Oh, there's nothing you can do with it. Well, I just want to say one more thing is about vehicles. Some car manufacturer was on C-SPAN here a while back. And somebody called in with what I thought was a great idea. Said, why don't they start building cars that are just plain and simple without all the...
Well, they're going to. And you know who's going to be building them? And you know where they're going to come from?
China.
Sure. You betcha.
I'm just guessing.
No. They'll be here any time now.
Well, and then the guy said, oh, well, nobody would buy those. Sure they would. I mean, you can't even get a buy here, pay here car cheap now.
No.
You have to pay so much a week. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then your insurance is, my son's friend, bought a home, the one that was, he's a veteran. And it's out in the country. And his insurance company, Geico, said that they would have to charge him more for his insurance because of the location. And I thought, out in the country? You know?
Yeah, but those are rules they just sort of make up as they go along. They really do. The things relating to how insurance companies write policies are, simply put, they are nuts. They're arbitrary, to say the least. They are capricious, you know.
Oh, I believe you. I believe you. And it's just like expecting, mothers to work and, oh, but don't neglect your child. Go to school. And they don't have time because they got to work.
Yeah, it's a pinch that I fear very few of us pay attention to. Because people who are able to just go until they drop. And it's after the drop that everybody looks up and goes, well, what happened?
Yeah.
Juanita, have yourself a wonderful evening. So
okay.
Good talking to you.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And onward we go. Oh, no? No? Okay. Mentioning China sort of brought this to mind. Fascinating little story that I got in the way of a pitch for an interview, but that it wasn't really the topic that grabbed me so much as the background. You know how I am with that kind of thing. Apparently, you know, there's a big law firm out there. It's called Greenberg Traurig. It makes tons and tons of money, and they represent huge corporations in so-called intellectual property suits. And there's a lawyer named Harley Lewin, and he makes his bones going and intimidating people who are selling what are called counterfeit goods. You know, you've seen them. You go through the flea market, and somebody's there selling Gucci bags or the Louis Vuitton, and they're $30 instead of $350 or $500 or whatever they go for. And you just know that, you know, that ain't real. Well, it's interesting because these massive corporations that, and I respect intellectual property, but I think we've got a lot of intellectual property problems out there. It's very interesting to note that as I went through this story, that the counterfeit operations are largely a product of these multinationals' own policies. Now they will intimidate the hell out of somebody that they catch allegedly selling counterfeit goods. You know, this Lewin has been said to say to one guy, you know, you better pay me and you better pay up quick and keep paying or I'm going to make your life a living hell, that kind of thing. But whether it's Cartier or whether it is the Gucci or Givenchy or any of the big houses, they go hard after these people that they consider to be counterfeiters. And, you know, back in the day, I remember when you'd go to a truck stop and you'd see eight-track tapes with really dodgy labels on them, and you'd know that they were so-called pirated eight-tracks or pirated cassettes, that kind of thing. And you'd know that they weren't for real, that somebody was copying and reselling cheap and blah, blah, blah. And half the time they sounded like crap. Well, this isn't that, because it turns out that these massive design houses, whether it's watches or bags or fashion, you know, shoes, Reebok had a problem. The way these counterfeit items get into the stream of holy commerce is that these massive multinational corporations, I mean, for instance, let's see here. Who are we? We're talking here. Let's see. I'm looking at a particular case that was in this pitch. Hermes International of Paris, chasing one fella down because his wife was, I guess, allegedly selling these counterfeit bags or some such. Well, here's the fun part. An older report over at The New Yorker about this Harley Lewin character, this shakedown artist. It notes that these counterfeit bags are actually made in the same factories in China that make the so-called legitimate items. These items, not just bags, but shoes, clothing, whatever, they're made in the same factory. And it's not like in the United States where the same factory that cans green beans and puts Green Giant on the label then does a run and puts Food Lion on the label. Not quite. Because what the Chinese do is they have two shifts, you know, say it's the the 8 to 4 and the 4 to 12. Well, then there's two shifts that produce those goods, and then everybody goes home. Not really, because then there's a third shift making the exact same items and moving them into a separate lane of the stream of holy commerce to come back to the U.S. and other parts of the world as so-called counterfeit bags. There's nothing counterfeit about them. Absolutely nothing counterfeit about them. They are the same bags made with the same material, made by, in many cases, the same workers with the same component materials. But they're deemed counterfeit because they're not going through the shipping and distribution process that the major corporate supplier is the end recipient of, he said, hanging the preposition out to dry. And so you have to look at it and say, wait a minute. How did this come to be a problem? Oh, wait, look, Hermes moved all of its production to China, where the Chinese government gives a nod and a wink to third shift production. And it's a cost of doing business. So in other words, it is these major corporations' desires to move their production offshore, whether it be an American corporation or a French corporation or a German corporation, to move their production offshore and keep people in their home countries from earning a living wage making them, and yet still charging the incredibly marked up prices for handmade goods. New Balance, Horace Chang. So who's responsible for the counterfeit problem? Is it the guy on Canal Street in New York City selling a watch that he bought for $1.60 for 50 bucks, or somebody hustling the same thing on eBay for 150? Is that the problem? Or is it, in fact, the corporation itself that set itself up for the problem in the first place? Seems to me that the answer is fairly clear. And it also seems to me that this is a picture of a larger economic model failure that goes across the spectrum. You heard it on the horn when Guy and I were in D.C. for health action, but the one before that. You heard it there. Companies that go to China have to sign deals with the Chinese government that will say, A, we will make only for export for 5 years before we can sell in the Chinese market. Everything we make, we will send back to the West and sell there. B, everything we're using technology-wise to produce these goods, trade secrets, whatever, we will give to the People's Republic of China, who then builds their own factory and crushes the competition 5 years hence so that it can't be sold within their own country. Same as the third shift Gucci bag. And yet some working stiff who's trying to earn enough money to keep the car payment made or keep the roof over his or her head, that's the problem? Excuse me? The whole damn thing is three-card Monty. It's actually a hell of a lot less honest than three-card Monty. And yet, crimes are built around it. And civil suits. And abuses of the justice system. But by God, you won't hear a Republican complaining about that abuse of the justice system and those cases clogging the courts. No, the only thing you ever hear about from some godless, soulless, lifeless, miserable, useless Republican is that people who have had the wrong limb lopped off or caught some godforsaken bacterial flesh-eating nightmare disease in a hospital are in the wrong for suing the people that gave it to them or did them the harm. Those are the problem. See, that's it when you come right down to it. Conservatives and Republicans, their priorities are all bass-ackwards. It's really that simple. It really is. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra. Welcome back.
I had to call back and chime in, man. I'm just what you were just talking about, because it's overcapacity, and then it's, you know, unsustainable demand. I mean, it's incredible what we're being subjected to. And then you couple that with a debt bubble, fake, you know, credit that you get because you don't have wages to buy the crap. So now you have a bunch of low-wage workers making too much junk that no one can afford. It's just, it's cannibalizing. It's unbelievable. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's like these corporations created it, and now they're bitching about it. And it's like, huh?
Yeah, and it, right. And how is it, would they, and I think it's a fair question, would Hermes have the same problem if they were keeping their production in France and paying French workers?
Well, and also with the, you know, the so-called the world's workshop, which is what these neoliberals like to call China. Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah, it's revolting. It's sickening.
It's really hideous. I'm just like, you know, sometimes when I have to hear the language of the neoliberals, it's just sort of, because in academia, there's a lag. You know how you have a lag with unemployment numbers?
Yeah.
There's a lag with, you know, ideology, what they're trying to shove down the student's throat, and they're still talking about neoliberalism. And I lost it the other day and went off on a professor. He had to kind of shut the hell up, because I'm like, you know what? You cannot sit here and teach shit anymore. Don't you ever look at TV? People howling, you know? They're howling. But I couldn't resist it anymore, Bob. It was
but you know what? It's a very real phenomenon, Sandra, because, and it's sort of multidisciplinary in its failings. Look at, go to the English department and look at what's being covered in modern literature. Modern literature starts with Ernest Hemingway and ends with John Steinbeck. You know what I'm saying? Modern poetry, you'll get Robert Frost and Carl Sandburg in modern poetry. And that's because it's only modern as compared to stuff that's thousands of years old. And it's the same thing with economic theory. It's only modern, it's only current, because it is somehow at least marginally measurably different. From, I'm sorry, some sort of weird noise going on behind me.
Yeah, no, I thought someone was revving up. You were going to blast off here in a moment.
I'm sorry, could you stand by for a minute, please?
Oh,
I'm sorry, Sandra. I should have just left it, turned the show over to you for a minute, but
I hope it's nothing.
I don't know. Did you hear that noise in the background?
No, I did. It sounded like it was revving up. Like, I understand why you want to check to make sure something didn't.
I thought we were getting ready to launch, and I didn't even know there was a silo here.
No, that's what it sounded like. I was hoping that nothing, you know, popped. Sometimes that's what's next, and then that's not good.
Oh,
good.
Well, you know, I should know by now that never to think that anything's over after a day where, you know, two vehicles break down at once. There's got to be a blow off.
And then you've been working on it too. I mean, that kind of stuff you always have. You know what I mean? It's kind of a never ending process, from what I can tell. If I just use my own computer business, it just goes on and on.
Yeah, without any let up whatsoever.
But I will tell you that the sound quality is much better.
Well, good. I know. I think John's still listening, and I know he'll be pleased to hear it. God knows I am. I don't know where that. Well, you know, we got rid of the evil hum, and instead we got the ramp up to launch there.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
Well, you know, the good thing was it didn't have anything to do with the studio setup. The bad thing was it didn't have anything to do with the studio setup.
Yeah. Well, no. You know, hopefully it'll just sort of stay away. It's something you can deal with. You know, on the downtime, it's nothing like that kind of stuff popping up in the middle of your,
Well, I know it sounds highly unprofessional, but, you know, it's a nearly 80-year-old house.
Oh, no.
And it's going to have 80-year-old problems.
Well, you know, shoot, you have to work things out as you can. I wouldn't trip on it. Hey, listen, did you hear about that, what's his name, Ocho Cinco?
Oh, what now?
Was hilarious because I hate this. I saw
some ad where he said he was going to change his name to another number or something, but I wasn't sure what he was hustling.
Well, no, this time it was that horrible. Have you heard of this Colin Cowherd person?
Oh yes,
he's horrific, and he was making, you know, his show is always just real reactionary. It's always he seems to have veiled hostility towards athletes. The majority of them are sort of black, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Sort of, yeah.
Excuse him, but he definitely is sort of seems to have some issues. Anyway, he made some comment about the high percentage of athletes who are broke after 5 years, because he's another one that defends the rich. That's all. I mean, half the man's show is defending the rich.
Right.
I have never heard anything like that. His show. I'm like, hello. But anyway, Ocho Cinco tweeted his ass about, is your girlfriend still cheating on you? And, you know, just sort of went off on him. I don't know. It's just because of who it was, you know.
He's apparently got a bit of a history, Cowher does, you know, for that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, you know, so I wasn't surprised, but I was laughing because, you know, Ocho Cinco was like, you know, dude, I haven't even left the game yet, and you obviously have some problems with black guys. I was like, damn, he just went there. You know what I mean?
I'm wondering if I wonder if this is, and I think it is, same guy I heard going up the road one day. You know, because I listen to talk radio when I'm in the car, and it was one of those it was one of those DC trips, and I heard some guy going off on Chad Ocho Cinco saying, mark my words, he'll be broke 5 years after he's out of the league.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. That's that Cowherd person. It's just sort of like, I don't know what he's thinking. He's just going to attack the athletes and not expect any sort of pushback. But anyway, so that was like I just thought that was kind of funny.
Well, the whole, I took some time this weekend because, you know, it's March Madness time.
Yeah.
And watching my beloved Mountaineers fall by the wayside into a number two seed behind Duke, and it's frankly Mike Krzyzewski's crowd of highly talented private prep school white boys.
Shut the hell up! What's their two seed? Who are they playing first?
We're a two seed, and our first game is St. James's School for the One-Legged.
Yeah, Yeah, right. Well, who is Duke playing?
Oh, well, Duke, you know, Duke has the kind of path to the Final Four where you just want to look at him and say, careful, boys. That's a path strewn with cupcakes. You might step on a sprinkle and get hurt.
Right, so it's real easy, right? I mean, the thing about them, I didn't realize they were so, are they extra white this year or something, more so than usual?
No, just always. apparently the story goes back, I won't give the person's name away, but I had an email exchange. It goes back to when Krzyzewski lost a prime recruit to an early departure to the NBA, and ever since then he's drifted toward white four-year guys.
What? Listen, I don't know why I find that so funny. It's like I just had a vision of his face, that guy, that coach. Come on. You know I'm going to be hating on them for real.
Oh.
God.
But, you know, so there's, you know, there's my Mountaineers who have, I think, a better RPI, a better out of schedule, you know, a lot of things to militate in their favor. But, you know, Duke could be 12-20. And Dick Vitale would still be sitting there on ESPN hollering, they're a number one seed, baby! You know, please.
Oh, God. Well, no, what about that one coach that made that reference about Duke, like, Leave It to Beaver episodes? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You know, that is, like, one of the funniest, I can't remember what coach he was, but it was just hilarious. He's like, Duke is Duke, always on TV, basically, like, Leave It to Beaver episodes. In his really thick Boston accent. I mean, it was just perfect.
Well, I just looked up the Colin Coward story, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's like he is such a prick, so it couldn't have happened to another.
This has to be the same guy I was hearing going up the road, because this shtick, well, the story, you know, you're right, the story is just a few days old. But he's been baiting Ochocinco for months. Well, it was the January trip. It was the January trip to D.C. for the Health Action Conference. I'm almost certain of it.
Yeah, because it was recent. I mean, he obviously has some sort of art on for Ochocinco. I don't know what the hell is going on, but it's sort of chronic with him.
And apparently just nailed him. Let's see. It's not my fault your girl's cheating on you. It's your fault. Try extends and stop worrying about me. LMAO, have a show about that.
Yeah, that's right. He did go off on his manhood, shall we say. Good.
Yeah, and then another one. You look like an extra from the movie Lord of the Rings. Get your lisp fixed before you do your next show.
That's right.
Oh, I'm so glad you pick up on this stuff, because it's such a delight.
No, it's hilarious. Oh, please, you know what? This country is just so mean, you know. So it's always amusing.
And then telling him, just say I don't like this black guy. Oh.
That's the thing. He just sort of blew it up. It was like, damn. I don't know. They give him such a hard time. I mean, I quite enjoy Chad, whatever his name is. He's funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't blame him for the Ochocinco thing. I think his original last name was Johnson.
Yes, Chad Johnson.
Kind of hard to put some separation between you and the rest of the league with Johnson for a last name.
Well, he also had, you know, when he first came out, he had crazy catches, so he used to do all sorts of antics. So he's been funny for years.
But you know what else is funny? I know this will resonate, so I'll bring it up in this conversation. ESPN has coverage of the first two rounds of the Masters, and, you know, and the Masters is coming up in Augusta, and, you know, it's always, you know, they show you the beautiful scenes of,
that horrible piano music.
Yeah, right. The piano music, the blooming azaleas, the pine trees there back in Amen Corner. You know, it's a gorgeous place. And they're showing Phil Mickelson putting on his jacket, and they're showing all these other golfers. And I'm sitting there scratching my pointy little head, Sandra, going, where's the picture of the guy who's won it the most lately?
You are kidding. They didn't show.
No.
They didn't. What?
Tune in to see the world's best golfers compete on the world's toughest golf course at the Masters, an event like no other.
No, you are.
Tinkling pianos in the background and no tiger in sight.
That cannot be.
I swear, I mean, I, you know, because I was deeply immersed in basketball, college hoops on ESPN for the last couple of days. And he ain't there.
Oh, shoot. So they just, well, you know what? It's like, well, that's what we used to be like for the last zillions of years. You know, a scratch.
Yeah, I know, but what's next? The Masters. Back to normal.
Back to normal, you know? Oh.
And again, the tinkling piano in the background and Ray's Creek babbling under the bridge and, the place where, and that's the thing. I mean, it was punctuated with stuff like, the course where legends were made. And there's a cut to Arnold Palmer. Places where greatness has been found. Cut of Jack Nicklaus.
He had to take that Bagger Vance person to pop up, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, there were guys whose names I don't know.
And you won't know. I mean,
I'm until 4 or 5 years ago, fairly avid golfer. I just can't afford it anymore.
Well, no, but I thought that he was supposed to be playing in that.
But to his discredit, he's all huddled up with Ari Fleischer plotting his return to golf.
That's right. I heard that he had that freak. You know, Tiger Woods, he ain't nothing but he's just straight up corporate. It's like I said, who really cares? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know. I'm one of those, I said when it was about Bill Clinton, I said, ain't nobody's business. And with Tiger, ain't nobody's business. You know, that's between him and Mrs. Tiger.
And not only that, but I was talking to somebody, you know, I was laughing.
But when you hire Ari Fleischer, you know.
I know, it was horrible. I was talking to someone in my so-called office, and, you know, I forgot who I was. I said, that damn N-word needs to just get back on the golf course. And then a couple of people looked at me for a minute. They waited, and they started laughing. Well, I didn't really mean for that to come out, but I was just like, dude, you know, please.
Yeah, I know. But just watch, Sandra. Just tune in. I don't care what time, because, you know, they paid a princely ransom for the rights to run the first 2 days of the Masters. You just tune into ESPN and watch a little while, and that thing will come around. And if you see Tiger Woods in there, it'll only be because you played the video backwards.
No, I'm gonna look for that because that just is hilarious that they would dare cut the man out. He won 4 times, right?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
You know, he doesn't have a real Grand Slam, but he's got a Tiger Slam.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the spillover, yeah, between years, but that still was, yeah.
Yeah, that don't happen every day.
Unbelievable. Hey, listen, let me ask you one quick question. What is the deal with the Daily Coast? I'm sorry, I know I mentioned it, but I'm still stuck on it. Why is he calling out Kucinich? It just seems so over the top. Are other people mad at Kucinich?
I certainly got that sense Wednesday in D.C., that there's a great deal of frustration with Dennis over the healthcare thing. And I got a message from Texas Betsy back earlier in the program saying that it was unconfirmed, but there is some idea that Kucinich will change his vote to yes on healthcare.
Yeah, well, no, as soon as I heard that story, I was like, oh, damn, that's some serious pressure.
But, I got the sense, and this is pure speculation on my part, Sandra, I got the sense that, you know, there's some jealousy in the halls of Congress over the fact that people like Dennis and Alan Grayson are beloved by the liberal community.
Well, you can't have it both ways. That's what's so disturbing about what you just said. It's like, well, which way do you want it? You get upset when there's people with principle, you want them to go away.
Well, you know what? That thing I was at was open to cameras and recording devices and everything, and I wasn't the only one rolling on it. I have a snippet of a real snarky little exchange that was started by Ed Schultz between the Senate so-called liberal Democrats and members of the progressive media. And I mean, some of it, and, you know, it's probably 5-10 minutes long, and it will make it'll make your hair curl. It really, really will. It'll blow you away. because it was this pushback. Ed starts this pushback, and then they push back against him, and then other people chime in. John Aravosis from over at America Blog, who does such a good job, stood up and delivered a little bit of a broadside, and it got real nasty. And I'm here to tell you that there's usually reception after these things, and there was after this one. And lo and behold, all the senators disappeared. I mean, gone.
I mean, you know, the thing is, I know the show's almost over. No, but this is some serious stuff. And for the, I don't know what bubble they're in, you know. There may be a price to pay. That's all I got to say about it.
You know, there was one place where there was a remark made, Sandra, about, you know, we're so glad that there's liberal media now, and we're so glad that you're here. But let's face it, there aren't that many of you.
Oh, well, that's...
And you know, that's, I mean, my the top of my skull was getting ready to launch. It sounded like that noise in the background a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Not that many of us?
That's a bit of a, yeah, yikes.
Yeah, because, you know, 3 hours every night of my life for the last 5-6 years, that's a hobby. And that, you know, I just like, you know, tilting at windmills.
The attitude that has kept, you know, the media, the progressive media the way it is, you know, that's an incredible statement.
But it was very interesting, and I got to download this video and then figure out some way to edit it or play it or something.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely want to hear that. That sounds quite interesting. Okay, listen, you know, have a nice evening.
All right, good talking to you, Sandra. Watch for the ad.
Oh, no, I will.
All right, later.
Bye now.
Sandra calling from California and bringing us to a close. A little bit over the limit, but it's not quite time for... not quite time for Malloy. I'll be looking forward to getting back into the swing and listening to Mike. He's on his way in a few minutes. And, you know, big shout out, hey, howdy, to the Malloy listeners, on the rerun after his program. Awfully glad to have you guys around. So that's it. We are at the end of the program for the evening. Awfully glad to be back behind the microphone. Awfully glad to have you all back here. Trust me, you were missed very, very much. Probably more than you missed me. But it's awfully good to be back, and we'll be back right here. You know, got a whole week ahead of us. My coffee break's over, back on my head. For those of you who can, please be advised that we can't even see the half month fundraising goal for the Horn from where we stand right now. And it's the same, you know, it's the same amount every month. It doesn't change. It's what it takes to make all of this go. And so if you can and you're able, if you can't, we completely understand. But if you can and you're able, hit that PayPal button or use the snail mail address. Both are available at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Thanks to everybody who makes this all happen. Thanks to Sue, thanks to Lottie, thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee, thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, thanks to the News Ninjas, Gene and Susan, thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne at Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, and... our critic at large is Reverbo with a new column up over at headonradionetwork.com. Go by, have a read, you'll enjoy it, and comment on it. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. When you consider the work they do, you can't help but come to the same conclusion that I do, that they are incredibly dedicated and utterly fearless. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.